Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world. We explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, spiritual, physical, sales, mental, relationships, disabilities, and many more interesting topics. Our broadcast team consists of outstanding people from both Canada and the U.S., including several Napoleon Hill certified instructors, as well as several authors. My name is Tom Tuttle Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter, and in March of 2012, I spoke at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker for that event. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And in that time, I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced and been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1". That's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. And I'm also a senior editorial researcher for the Canadian Business Journal. We're a digital-only publication, and we're the official and only media partner of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find us online at cbj.ca. And you can find out more about me at my website. It's mrpma.ca. My guest today is John Patrick Hickey. And John has been coaching leaders and individuals and inspiring groups large and small for over 3 decades. He has a personal passion to help success-minded people identify their giftings, set goals, and achieve their dreams while becoming the best they can be. John is a gifted speaker who knows how to help leaders build teams and accomplish their objectives. Having been a pastor and life coach for several years, John Patrick knows how to work with churches as well as executives and other groups. John Patrick Hickey is a certified life coach, as well as being certified in DISC assessments and evaluations. He specializes in communication, goal setting, and the discovery of a person's key purpose in life. John Patrick is also the author of 2 books, Daily Thoughts, 90 Daily Readings for Success-Minded People, and his new book, All You Have Is Now, How Your Approach to the World Determines Your Destiny. He is also a speaker, instructor, and well-read blogger. John Patrick and his wife Kate are natives of Michigan, and he has 2 daughters who are both married and have blessed John and Kate with 9 grandchildren. And also John's book is published, his new one, All You Have Is Now, is published by Tremendous Life Books. And anyone who's listened to me knows I love Tracy Jones and Tremendous Life Books and her late father, Charlie Tremendous Jones. Welcome to the show today, John Patrick.
Thank you so much, Tom. I'm happy to be here.
I was telling you before the show, I'm up to page 29 on your book. I started reading it yesterday, and so I'm looking forward to finishing that in the next few days. And I mentioned as well before the show, I always like to start by asking what age you were when you first came across the book Think and Grow Rich, and if there was anyone close to you or special to you that suggested that you need to read that book.
Actually, I first read the book in the early 70s, which would have made me in my early 20s. And I got the book. I remember I did get the book from a good friend who was very successful in the Amway business. And he passed that on to me. And as with most of the people who discover Think and Grow Rich, it made a drastic change in my life and my perspective of who I am and how I was going to achieve my dreams and succeed myself.
Excellent. I love it. And then once you've read that book, it opens up so many possibilities for your life. But I love in your description, you talk about helping people discover their key purpose in life. Now, Napoleon Hill will call that definite purpose in life. And as a pastor, you can also look at the look at things as far as a God-given definite purpose. And I know when I finished my Napoleon Hill certification, we were supposed to do our mission statement. I prepared one, and Judy Williamson, the director of the World Learning Center, said, "Tom, that's not your definite purpose. That's someone else's that we both know, my friend Shane Moran from Organo Gold." And she said, "Your purpose is not that." So then I went back to the drawing board, pray, think, and now the purpose I developed is the one I believe that if Jesus were sitting across a table from me and I was able to ask him, why am I here? What should I be focusing on? I believe this is the document he would hand to me. And so tell me about a definite purpose, the key purpose in life, and also how having it be a God-given key purpose really will direct you a lot better than trying to have a definite purpose to be like somebody else.
Yeah, well, Tom, I think your description is just perfect, because that is what the dream, the ultimate goal, the purpose that we all have, that's what, in a sense, what I refer to as being success-minded is all about. It's understanding that, you know, we were all created for a purpose. We're all here for a purpose. I don't believe that God had a quota to fill, or that there were, so many people that had to be walking the planet at any given time. Every single person who is here has a purpose, and the discovery of that purpose is not really a mystery. We tend to make it one and complicate it, but it really isn't. In all my time of coaching and pastoring and counseling with people, I think the most common question I've always had is, what am I to do with my life? And my response always is, what is it that you want to do? Because I believe that that desire that's inside of us, that dream, is that God-given dream. There are people who think that, well, if I really want to do this, then it can't be from God, because God wants to send me somewhere that I don't want to go and do things I don't want to do. And that's not true. You know, that is our definite purpose, is to discover that thing that ignites us, that makes us come alive. And for many, many people, that has been there for years. That every time there's a massive change in their life, every time something, career change, their own personal changes, they contemplate what they want to do, this thing always comes back up. It's kind of like this reoccurring dream that they have inside, and they think, well, if only I could. And the great thing with understanding definite purpose is you realize, yeah, I can. It's not just if I could, it is I can. I can do this. I can achieve that. And one of the things in helping people to discover that purpose that they have, it's almost like giving them permission. Some people are waiting just to get permission for someone to say to them, okay, it's time to go and do this. And then they come alive. Then they go forward and do the things that are in their heart and that they really want to do. But you got to know what that is. And one of the things that Napoleon Hill pointed out, not only in Think and Grow Rich, but also in Laws of Success and other work, is, you know, the refining of that definite purpose, writing it down, getting it clear, knowing exactly what it is. That it, once we do that, it gives us this power that we wouldn't have otherwise. You know, if people think that they can just keep their goal or their purpose in their head and it's going to be safe there, they tend to find that's not true. You know, our brains are wonderful things, but they leak. And we forget things, we change things, where by looking at our purpose and writing it down and getting clear on exactly what we want helps us to focus, helps us to give us that roadmap so we know where it is that we're going.
Exactly. And we know what we can or should get out of our life so that we can get more of this in it. But at the same time, I was thinking as well that your definite purpose does not always have to be, and perhaps in most cases isn't, necessarily your job. You may be passionate about a World Vision. I love World Vision, Mercy Ships, and other great missions. You may be passionate about your church. You may be passionate about a cancer society. You may be passionate about other areas in your life, and there's always something you can do to be involved and move forward with that passion. But it doesn't always have to be your job. Your job can support it, and hopefully your job can give you autonomy to pursue it and to support you in pursuing it. But so many people are thinking, well, my passion would be to help. I know my wife loves wildlife, so wildlife in Africa. But you can do that. It doesn't have to be a full-time job, but there are ways that you can do it. Talk to other people about it, post about it, donate to them, volunteer for them. And so talk about that, about the purpose, and it not really doesn't have to be your job, right?
No, it doesn't have to be your job. And there's a lot of jobs that, you know, when we're looking at our purpose, we think, you know, we tend to confine things. Let's say that I feel that my purpose is to help people. You know, I want to help people move forward. So in my evaluation, I can look at it and say, well, I'm going to be a psychologist, I'll be a coach, I'll be a business person, I'll be an author, whatever, in order mm-hmm. to help people. Those are jobs, but the purpose is to help people. The job is the resource that I can use my skills, my talents, my abilities mm-hmm. in order to fulfill that purpose. But it's what, I mean, you don't, a little kid doesn't sit down and say, you know, when I grow up, I want to be a nuclear physicist. So how do we get nuclear physicists? You know,
yes.
We get them from people who grow up with a passion for discovery. We get
yes.
them with people who grow up with a desire to understand the universe and how it functions, and their purpose is in those things. They just wandered off into that job because it was something that appealed to them, that they were good at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do think that, you know, we live in a time, no matter what other people may tell you, we do live in a time of great opportunity. And I don't think anybody should be in a job that they hate.
No.
You know, if you're doing things that you hate to do, then you're not doing the right thing. It
yeah.
doesn't mean that we, you know, when we talk about fulfilling our passion, you know, I might want to be an educator, but I might hate being a teacher. You know, and you think, well, how, you know, you can't be an educator without being a teacher. Well, yeah, you can. You know, education is a very broad field, you know.
Yeah.
It's like I can get into medicine and help people to be well, and I don't have to become a doctor. So it's, you know, understanding that it's more than, like you said, it's more than your job. Your job is using your skills and your talents, and it does support what you desire to do. But that definite purpose, that, you know, goal that we have inside, that dream that we have, is much deeper, much bigger.
Yes, I love it. And then I also noticed 29 pages in, I notice it significantly, a bent towards taking action. And I love this. I've even recently been a little bit scolded on something because I tend to have a ready, fire, aim approach as opposed to a ready, aim, fire approach. And I figure if I attempt things, try things, readjust and learn as I grow, that I'll explore more things and be successful at more things. And then I have another friend who I'm thinking in mind who, when I see him soon, is going to have these same plans as he had last year and the year before and the year before.
Absolutely.
And so action. Talk about taking action, because you can plan yourself to death. If you never take action, you're not going to find out if it's working or not working or what you have inside you that God gave you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, action is the key to all success. Without it, you're not going to have it. It's just that simple, you know. And, you know, you talked about the being, you know, ready, fire, aim approach. You know, one of my favorite sayings is it's better to be a person who's told to wait than a person who waits to be told. And it's it's having that sense of urgency, having that sense that I need to do this. You know, one of the purposes of writing the book, All You Have Is Now, was not to help people understand how to set goals. There's lots and lots of great material out there on goal setting. I believe goals are important. And I talk about goal setting in there because it is kind of the tool that I'm using. But the point of it is to help people understand that setting a goal is only part of the process, that unless you take action and do something to achieve that goal, it isn't going to happen. And, you know, my rule of thumb in telling people is that when you set a goal, you don't let 24 hours pass without taking some kind of action towards the achievement of that goal. You don't wait. People constantly are preparing and waiting and thinking, well, the time's going to be right. Time is never right. It is never the perfect time. Everything will never completely fall into place. If that was the case, you wouldn't need a goal because everything would just work out dandy. But it doesn't. You know, goals and achievement take it takes action, it takes hard work, and it takes persistent work, you know, persistent action in order to achieve things. You have to have a determination that I'm going to do this, and you keep moving, and you keep doing it, and you keep taking action. And if one step doesn't work, then that's fine. You go to the next one. You know, you reevaluate what you've done and move forward from there. But you have to constantly be in motion. You have to constantly be taking action in order to obtain achievement. If you sit around and wait, you know, time is that one thing that is a level playing field for all people. Napoleon Hill had no more time than what we have. You know, Benjamin Franklin, Michelangelo had no more time than what we have. And yet they were very productive with their lives. So how did they do it? Well, they took action. They did things. They didn't just plan them. They actually put them into practice, and they did them and worked at them. And that's how we succeed, is by actually taking action and using the time that we have wisely in order to move forward.
I love it, and I get so much excitement from having a list of to-dos every day, and as you said, when I think of a goal, the very first thing I do is put it in today's performance planner. If I don't do something immediately, it gets moved forward, but for instance, my newsletter, I wrote down to do something about it. I probably won't send it out till Friday, but there's at least 5 minutes of something I can do on it today so that I can get a little check mark beside that saying, okay, I worked and progressed on that project. And boy, when you take action and you see those check marks over the weeks and months and years, you know you're taking action. Whereas, unfortunately, the average North American spends, I forget how many hours a week, might be over 32, watching television, playing on the internet, and playing video games. And so
you're absolutely right.
Not a lot of urgency built into those tasks.
Yeah, I love making lists and checking them off, like you were saying. Matter of fact, my wife always jokes about it, that when something happens and she says, well, you can check it off your list. you know, I like it to the point that if I do something that isn't on the list, I'll write it on the list.
Yeah, I put it on the list, too. Yeah, I do the same thing. It's an accomplishment, so if I look back a month from now, I'm going to be like, oh, I did that on that day. Great. That's funny.
There are people who have lists that are never checked. You know, they write a list and then they turn the page and the next page is blank, but the list is still on the other side. And, you know, the results are just like that blank page. They just don't exist. And it's when you can, you know, be motivated to check those things off, to look and see, this is what I need to do, and then get it done. There's a great sense of satisfaction in taking action, in doing something, and getting it off your list and feeling like, okay, I've accomplished that. Doesn't matter how big or how small. It generates that sense of satisfaction that you're moving forward and achieving the things that you want to achieve.
Exactly. And one of the things, you know, when you work with people like we do, that you begin to recognize people is people who are talking about what they want to do and they have reasons why, versus the people that talk about it and have all the excuses for why not. Well, I'm busy and I'm a member of this committee and I do this at church, and all great things. You don't want to tell someone, well, stop volunteering at church and don't, you know, be involved in your kid's school this. However, we all have the same amount of time. There's something you can do. And if you're going to think of all the excuses why not, you've already just might as well not start, because you've already just convinced yourself you can't do it. And so you begin to notice people like that when they're talking about their goals. Are they the ones who are saying, this is why and this is how, and may take a while, but you know, I'm going to fit it in here, I'm going to do it here, versus the ones that have seven excuses why everything can't be done?
Yeah, I mean, you can have 100 excuses why you can't achieve, but all you need is one that says you can. That's all you need.
Yeah.
To move you forward. It doesn't take a lot of other, you know, things to get done. Ben Franklin always says, you know, he who's good at making excuses is good at very little else. And I believe that's true, that excuses are the... Now I just did an article on, that was called No Excuses, where I talk about the fact that, you know, excuses are like poison, you know. I mean, once you start them, they'll just lead you to, you know, to destruction. They'll kill you. They'll kill your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
There are no excuses. You know, yeah, we all have areas in life that we have to deal with, that, you know, we're busy people. We have jobs. We have families. We have all kinds of stuff. But it's when you start looking at those things and seeing that those are actually motivators, those are things to help you to achieve. They aren't things to hinder you. And
right.
Don't look at them through, you know, the prism of, you know, being something to hold you back. I mean, you know, look at yourself, Tom. You know, if you allowed the struggles you've had in life to hold you back, you wouldn't be doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, able to not use those as an excuse and move forward and succeed in the things that you wanted to do and moving toward that definite purpose.
I love it. I love it. And I love Tracy Jones' father, Charlie Tremendous Jones, talked about these excuses people, and he referred to them as thumb suckers. Yes. And so those people with excuses for everything are the thumb suckers. And so identify those people, stay away from them, and work with the people who have all the great reasons why they're going to accomplish their goal, even if they know it'll take them some time and a lot of effort. Now, we talk so much about action and success and goals, and yet at the same time, a few weeks ago, I was telling my wife that every year now, as I get older, I'm 49, my goals tend to be more around vacation time and friend time, relaxation time. You know, if I get a... for instance, instead of taking a raise, I'll take extra week vacation. And so the purpose of success and the purpose, definite purpose in life is amazing. It's great to have that. But at the same time, it's not wrong to want to vacation a lot and go to places and spend time with friends, is it?
No, absolutely not. Matter of fact, it's... You know, that's all part of it. That's all important. You can't, you know, because we talked a lot about, you know, besides taking action, the fact that to achieve takes a lot of work. It takes determination and hard work. Well, if you're run down and, you know, exhausted, you're not going to achieve anything. You know, just, you know, after, if you run out of gas, you know, the car sits still. It can be a Rolls Royce, but it's going to sit there if it doesn't have any gas. And the same thing is true with us. We need rest, and relaxation is important. We were created to have rest. I mean, God himself took a day of rest and told us, you know, that you have to have that time that you're, in a sense, recharging, that time where you can rest and get yourself back together. And I think that things like vacations, days off, having an evening that you can spend with your family. You know, family is, when we look at success and having a successful life, you're not just talking about making money and, you know, having a good career. You know, life consists of your family. It consists of your personal time, of who you are, your character, your spiritual self. There's so many things, and all of those are important. If you succeed in business and your family falls apart, then you failed. You know, you haven't really achieved. And so you have to have those times that you say, okay, I need this time with my family, and you have fun and you enjoy it. And that's not wasting time. Wasting time is, you know, spending six nights a week sitting in front of a television set, not talking to them and not doing anything productive. You know,
yes.
You don't want to waste time, but resting, enjoying people, socializing with friends, you know, recharging your batteries are all important. And that is part of understanding proper success principles, is that you do need that time to recoup and to move forward.
Amen. Now, you're a certified life coach as well. I have a number of great friends that are in the life coaching industry. I believe so much in it. You know, all the great sports athletes all have coaches, and we need them for our life because sometimes our family won't be the most honest with us. Sometimes we can't always have someone find us accountable. And so it's so important to have a life coach, and yet I wouldn't want to take on a life coach who made me just focus 90% of my time on the income side of the equation. And so as a pastor, you have a really unique, not unique, but you really have a different perspective on life coaching than someone who would not be a Christian.
Yeah, I think that, you know, a coach's job is to help a person to understand and, you know, what their dream is, what their purpose is, and to help move them forward to that. I mean, you got coaches in many areas of life, but as a life coach, you know, you want to help people to live, to have a good, productive life. Sometimes that means telling people to not be as involved as they were. You know, one of the churches I was administrative pastor at, the senior pastor used to always tell me, he says, every time you talk to somebody, they quit something. because people would be, you know, overburdened. They'd have so many things going on that there was no time for family. There was no time for themselves. They were tired.
Right.
They were burned out. They were worn out. And part of that process of coaching is to be able to say, look, this isn't healthy for you. You know, you need to cut back here. You need to focus more here. And giving direction and giving some help. The one of the things that a coach does not do is a coach isn't going to tell you what your purpose is, or they shouldn't tell you what your purpose is, because that is up to you. Don't let somebody else define your dream, you know, and a coach shouldn't be questioning someone's dream. I have a fellow I've been working with for a long time who has dealt with a severe problem of schizophrenia, and he's doing very well now, and he's on medication, and you know, he understands his symptoms, and he's actually done very, very well. But he has this dream. He wants to eventually be Attorney General of the United States, Surgeon General. And you know, I mean, people laugh at him, and he's been told by church leadership that he, you know, needs to be a little more realistic. And I like to encourage him to move forward. And, you know, he's right now he is in medical school and he's going to be going to a very prestigious school. It takes a lot of work and a lot of effort, but he's going after a dream. And who am I to tell him that that dream isn't real? He may become, Surgeon General. Maybe he won't.
And it's not like he has no skill or talent for it. It's not like myself, whose hands are all arthritis up, saying I want to be a Surgeon General or anything like that, or some guy blind or something. He has the skill and talent. So if you have skill and talent, any dream is possible.
It is, and that's the important thing of coaching, is to realize that you're there to help people to achieve. You're not there to define their dreams for them. Now, of course, if someone's doing something that is illegal, immoral, or is just wrong, unethical, then you want to correct that, and you don't encourage them to pursue those things. But believe me, that doesn't happen. Someone doesn't come to you and say, well, my goal in life is to be, the greatest bank robber in the world.
Yeah, yeah. All right, then. Let's work on that goal.
That's my goal. But, but sometimes people's dreams seem very far-fetched to us. And
yeah.
It's okay. Because to me, if a dream isn't impossible, it's not worth pursuing.
Exactly. If it's not big like that, then it's just a daily to-do, just something you can do. And that's not as cool as something that you didn't know that you could do, or other people didn't think you could. That's way more a great accomplishment in life than something that's easy to do. Now, you're also certified in DISC assessments, and I love behavior assessments. If I partner with someone in business, they would have to do one. I love doing them for my own research. I've done 4 or 5 different types of behavior assessments. It teaches me a lot about myself. But also, if I use them to work with other people, I'll give them my assessment just so they kind of know in advance who I am and how they might want to work with me and that sort of thing. So tell me about DISC assessments, behavior assessments, because it's such a great tool for us to know about ourselves, but also for others that we work with, partner with, love to know about us as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone should, do either a DISC assessment. There's a lot of other ones that are available. A lot of them are based on the DISC principles, or, like a Myers-Briggs or, one of the other
Winslow is one I know.
Yeah. And they're good tools because they give you good insight into not who you are, because they really are not personality tests. What they are is behavioral.
Behavior.
This is, why am I doing the things that I'm doing? How do I look at the world? How do I communicate? And how do I like to be communicated to? When I'm working with teams, that's where I really like to use DISC with the team, because it has two purposes. One is to help people understand why they do the things they do, how they like to be communicated to, how they communicate to other people. But it also helps them to understand the other people in the team, that if Mary is a high I person who is very friendly and bubbly and chatty and wants to talk about your family vacation and the kids and all the things going on, and Bob is a high D who is very direct and very action or results oriented and just wants to get the job done and doesn't want to chat, doesn't want to visit. So when Mary comes to Bob and she starts chattering away and he just kind of blocks her off, she gets offended and her feelings get hurt. But when she understands, that's not how she needs to approach him. And then he understands, she's not trying to be irritating, this is how she communicates. Then you can start working together as a team and recognizing the strengths and the gifts of each other. And Mary knows when she needs something from Bob to go to him, sit down with him, and ask him for it straight out. just deal with what needs to be dealt with. Bob knows that when he comes and he talks to Mary, ask her how she's feeling. They don't have to get, they don't have to take on entirely different behaviors, but they do have to be respectful, because the one of the things that you learn through DISC and behavioral assessments is you are not stuck in a certain behavioral style. You do this, and this is how you function and you communicate, but you can adjust so that you can communicate with other people. And when that happens, then a team can gel. Then a team recognizes that, you know, this person is strong with customer service because they're friendly and they're personable. This person over here is good with accounting because they're very detail-oriented and very much into being able to work by themselves and be productive and get things done. You know, this other person is very level and steady and is a good manager because they can make sure that things get done without being emotionally involved in the whole process. So you look at these different things, let people work in their area of strength, and you've got a team that you can't stop. I mean, it's wonderful to watch that all gel together. You know, I've seen groups of people who were very dysfunctional on their own, who go through and really understand each other and their behavioral and communication styles, who become a very strong bonded team, who enjoy working together because they understand each other.
I love it, and I could certainly attest to that, that when you know other people's behavior or tendencies, yeah, you can adapt. You don't have to change who you are, but when you're with them, you can adapt yourself more to their tendency. And when you know this, it can also cause a redirection of people. Okay, you should work in this area, and you should work in this area. You guys change. You know, but when you're working in a team, you know how you behave in circumstances, and you know how others behave and why, and what to, how to approach them and how to work with them. This eliminates a lot of challenges, and it's one of Napoleon Hill's 17 success principles, teamwork. And what better way to have teamwork than to know the behavior of the people on your team and the reasons for their behavior. Now, John, you also know that, of course, Napoleon Hill wrote about the Mastermind Group, and he wrote a lot about Henry Ford and Thomas Edison with their ideal mastermind partner that we should all have is our spouse. And it sounds like 9 grandchildren. You haven't just been married for 4 or 5 years. So how has having a mastermind group with your wife? Also, I know that as a pastor, the wife kind of really has to be on board, because she kind of gives you in service to others at any time, any day, for a variety of, you know, very good reasons. And so talk about having a mastermind with your wife for being a pastor, but also all the other things you do, because it sounds like you've been married a few years.
Well, you know, and we talked about the DISC working for a team. It also works in a family. I am a very high S person, and I'm pretty much very non-emotional. I mean, I have emotions that I get excited, and you know, but it's
I'm like
a lot of times that I can be pretty straight-lined on things. And my wife is a very high D. She's a very strong, driven person. And at first, when we were first married, it was, you know, there'd be times that it, you know, she'd be talking and I'd feel like she was angry with me. And she would tell me things and she'd think I didn't care. And when we understood each other better, as far as the behavioral styles, we know that this is how we communicate, and we communicate very well, you know, in what we're doing. And it's with the mastermind part, you know, my wife has been an incredible partner in things. My wife is a very, she owns her own business as well. She is very strong, probably one of the more brilliant people I know. And you know, we believe in what each other is doing. And I support her in all that she's doing. She supports me in everything that I'm doing. And that makes a world of difference, because there is no competition. There is no, you know, times where, you know, there's times that we have to adjust. You know, one of the things my wife's job does is it takes her all over the world, which means that sometimes she's gone for a couple weeks at a time, you know, several times during the year. And we've learned to adjust to that. We talk every day over Skype, and, you know, we've done things that help us to be able to keep in touch and make it bearable. But it's never a case of, oh, you're going away again kind of thing, you know. It's,
yeah. Oh, 2 weeks, how am I going to eat, and what am I going to do?
Well, I love to cook, so that doesn't...
Oh, very good.
But I'm a writer, and doing that, there's a lot of times I'm just sitting at my computer and I'm pounding away and researching, and there is no, you know, you're spending too much time doing this or that. We're just very supportive of each other and what we're doing, and I've seen that in our girls. You know, our oldest daughter has 6 children.
Wow.
Her and her husband own their own photography business, plus she homeschools.
Wow.
But they were raised to understand that they can achieve anything. You know, people tell their kids often, you know, you can be anything you want. And then when they try to be what they want, they tell them to be a little more realistic. you know. We really meant it, and we still mean it. You know, our youngest daughter has 3 kids, and her husband lives very close to us, so we get to spend a lot of time with them. But she's very creative, and you know, she has does a lot of writing and theater work with her church, and you know, it's so good to see them as individual people. They aren't lost in, you know, trying to figure out who they are or what they do. They both know who they are. And, you know, they have their own lives beside the lives that we share. And we have great communication with them. You know, we are able to talk and spend time together, and, you know, we go on vacations together. And
wow.
It has been wonderful. And I believe that a lot of that has just been because we've been able to respect and encourage the individualness of each of us, in saying we don't all have to be the same. You know,
right.
We all have our strengths, we all have weaknesses, but this is how we communicate, and we understand that of each other and are supportive.
And we all have our purposes. God created us for something, and so as long as we can support and encourage that in our spouses, we're doing good in God's eyes, and we're doing good in our spouse's eyes, and so, you know, that's the best situation. Well, thank you so much for your time today, John. I really appreciate it. As I said, I'm on page 29 of your book. I'll be finished it in the next couple of days. I love any books that are put out by Tremendous Life Books. Is that the best place to find the book?
Yeah, if they just go to tremendouslifebooks.com, they can find it there. They can also find it on my website, which is johnpatrickhickey.com, all one word. And, you know, they can also order it through there. So those are the best places to do that.
And you do. You have a well-read blog, so that's on the John Patrick Hickey, HICKEY.com website as well.
Information on the blogs, on articles that I've written, both of the books. Also, if someone's interested in having me come and speak or do training for them or some kind of seminar, then that is all on that website. Everything is on the website, so if they go there, they can find everything that. that they could ever hope to find.
I love it, and I love it right away because right on the home page, first paragraph has a quote from W. Clement Stone. And without him, there would be no Napoleon Hill Foundation. So I love W. Clement Stone. Thank you so much today, John. Have yourself an amazing day.
You too, Tom. Thank you so much.